Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Now, well-known influencer Rachel Gorry has joined me in studio along with nurse Anne-Marie Ward. Rachel's husband Daniel died of cancer 5 years ago, aged only 29, and she was able to care for him at home in his final days with the help of a night nurse. Anne-Marie works as a night nurse, offering care to people at end of life and much needed respite to their families and carers. Well, this coming Tuesday, the annual Boots Night Walk is taking place in the Phoenix Park and other locations around the country, and money raised will go towards funding night nurse services. And Rachel is an ambassador for the walk. Rachel and Anne-Marie, thanks so much for coming into studio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're both so welcome. Rachel, I know your story, but if you don't mind, let's go back a bit to yourself and Daniel first, and you've three beautiful little girls. You two met when you were just kids yourself.
Yeah, we were 12. I moved from Dublin down to Offaly, and Daniel knocked on the door to see if I was coming out to play. And that was it. We spent every day together. We were in school together in the same class. And he asked me to be his girlfriend when we were 16. And the rest is history. We had Leah when we were 20. We got married at 21. And then Daniel was diagnosed when we were 27 with terminal cancer.
Tell me what Daniel was like.
He was just a gentle giant, is the only way I could describe him. He was 6'4". He was such a big man. But he was just the gentlest soul. He was so caring. He was the best daddy to our girls. He was just, and he was so funny. Like, he was so funny. We just laughed all the time. He was just amazing.
So life was going great. And tell me about when you first realised Daniel wasn't well.
He was kind of suffering from acid reflux.
Okay.
He went to the doctor and he was given antibiotics for a gut infection. This happened 3 times. He'd finished the course. He would say, I still have it. He'd go back. Then he would start getting stomach pain. We were due to go on a family holiday to Portugal. So the second day on the holiday, Daniel started passing blood. And we rushed him to the hospital. He wasn't feeling well at all. He needed 2 blood transfusions. They put a camera down and they said, we can see a tumour, basically. And they told us that we are nearly sure that it is cancer. We can't do a biopsy because that's just going to make him bleed more. And we need to stop the bleeding because he can die. He needs 2 blood transfusions. They kept us in the hospital for 8 days before letting us home. We landed, went straight to James's. And eventually, after tests and scans, we got the terminal diagnosis that Daniel had cancer in 6 places. It had spread throughout his body, and they did give him chemotherapy to maybe prolong his life a little bit, but we always knew that he was going to die.
And take me to that, like, when you're in Portugal, you're not even here in Ireland.
Yeah.
And when they kind of mentioned a tumour, how did you both deal with that? I read something you said which I thought was really beautiful, that he was really strong initially, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. He had just held it together. I was a mess. I was a wreck. And he was like, no, it'll be okay. When we were obviously in Portugal, there was a language barrier.
Mm.
And so when we came home, they said, they can't tell you that he has cancer because there was no biopsy done. And it's an old man's cancer. So esophageal cancer, typically they say, is an old man's cancer. There's no way. He's 27. You know, he's very healthy. He doesn't smoke. He like drinks occasionally, like socially with friends, but nothing like to excess. And so they were like, it's very hard to believe we need. So we kind of got a bit of hope again, thinking maybe we misunderstood something. The word cancer was mentioned, but maybe we picked up something wrong, you know. And unfortunately, no, that's exactly what he had. And
And obviously you were really honest, which I thought is really interesting, with your girls from the beginning, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think, so I had the girls in therapy when Daniel was sick, and I was in therapy when Daniel was sick as well, and it really helped. And they said, kids know more than what you think they know. And, you know, I know that as well, you know. So I thought, they said, just be honest with them and don't lie. And we knew that Daniel was going to die, so I didn't want to tell the girls, oh no, daddy's going to get better, when we knew that he was going to pass eventually. So when the time came that our daughter Leah said to us, the other two were kind of too small to kind of understand, but Leah did ask us one day, is daddy going to die? And, you know, we had to say, yes, he is. And I just, her, the scream that she let out, it will haunt me till the day I die, I think. And the way she threw her little arms around his neck, she was 9 at the time. She's 14 now, but it haunts me to the scream that she let out. But I think us being honest with her, it helped, because she knew then, and anything she asked, we were always honest with her and open. And I do think that's the way to go.
And there was, you did play therapy with them, and I thought the bubbles idea is a lovely idea, you know.
It's brilliant way for them to get their little heads around it. So basically, she couldn't understand how Daddy was getting medicine. She said, Daddy's getting medicine, so how is he not getting better? And basically, the way the therapist explained it was, so they filled a room with bubbles and they gave the kids a little sword and they had a timer on. They said, no, you have to get all the bubbles in the room and burst them all. And the bubbles are Daddy's cancer cells and you're the medicine and you need to get them all. So the timer went and the room was still full of bubbles. So they were like, see, sometimes the medicine can't get all the bubbles in time. So when she asked us, was Daddy going to die? We said, yes. And she said, so is the sword not getting all of the bubbles? And we said, no, it can't get all the bubbles. So she was able to wrap her head around the fact that, okay, that's why he's going to die. The medicine's not working.
It's such a good idea to do it that way. And then when Daniel was getting the treatment, how did you stay strong for him? Because then probably you became very strong, didn't you, for him?
And oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know we were given a terminal diagnosis and I look back now and I think maybe was I a little bit naive. I still had hope. I still believed there was a little chance. Like, you hear miracle stories all the time. And I remember like doing so much research into things and contacting hospitals out of the country and doing whatever I could. And I genuinely said, I think there could be a hope here or whatever. So I said strong for him. And I think it was for him to see me have hope, I think kept him going. But then behind closed doors, I would be a wreck in front of my family, my friends. I would break down, but always in front of Daniel. The smile was plastered on. We've got this. This will be grand. You'll fly it, you know. But eventually then, the sicker he got, it was very hard to put that front on. And then he would know, especially if I didn't have makeup on. He'd be like, who are you crying to the big red face on you? So, you know, it was harder to hide, I suppose.
And of course, yeah, he was a beautiful man. He lived for 18 months after his diagnosis, I think.
Yeah.
He was only 29. So when, Rachel, did the night nurse come into your life to help you keep Daniel at home? Because he wanted to be at home.
He did want to be at home. He wanted to be at home, myself and our three daughters. So basically, there was nothing else that they could do. They had to stop treatment and Daniel wasn't strong enough for treatment anymore. And there wasn't anything they could do. We were in hospital and they just said, look, we think it's time now to send you home. So we came home and he lived for just over a week at home. And then the night nurses came in. And I honestly, I'd be lost without Anne-Marie and the work that they do, because I can't tell you the sense of calm that they bring, because so many things happen that you don't know. So say like one time, for example, Daniel projectile vomited this black tar all over me, all over the hospital bed. I didn't know what this was and I was so frightened. And it turned out that it was just his organs were shutting down, the type of cancer that he had. And he hadn't eaten in so long. And I just ran for the nurse who was in the kitchen. Like, they're not intrusive at all. They're just there if you need them. And it brings such a sense of calm. She comes in, she's like, no, that's fine. It's okay. And explains what happens, you know. And I just think even when he was passing, the sense of calm that they bring is absolutely incredible.
And there she is sitting beside you. Anne-Marie, you work as a night nurse.
I do.
I think you were working in a GP practice and during COVID, you volunteered for night nurse duties. Why did you do that? And is it incredibly difficult?
It's not incredibly difficult, really, Miriam. I did, it was new to me. I'm night nursing now 4 years, but I was working as a practice nurse in GP practice. But we weren't that busy during COVID. Because patients obviously couldn't get to the surgery. And I did notice, a friend of mine said, they're very, very stuck on the night nurse team with the Cancer Society. And what was happening, patients were in hospital, very, very ill. And some of them were end of life in hospital and they couldn't be with their loved ones. So they chose to, rightly, to be at home. So there was a huge pressure then on the night nursing service from the Irish Cancer Society to have nurses out there. We continued the service right through the pandemic. So I offered my services. As I say, I could reduce my hours in the GP surgery, and I started to do it. And I thought, well, I'll do it, you know, until the pandemic is over. But it really, really is, I have to say, an extremely rewarding job. And to be able to use my profession as a nurse to bring such comfort and to bring a little bit of peace and calm to the situation at the most awful time in people's lives. I mean, the patients are absolutely amazing. They're so brave, like Rachel. They're so, so brave. We're there, we come in, and a lot of the time they just haven't slept. They haven't had any sleep at all. They're going 24/7 and you can't go on empty. So with us going in, we can assess the situation. the priority is the patient, really and truly the priority is the patient, that the patient has no pain, A, and then no anxiety or restlessness. We go in, assess the patient, make sure there's no pain, maybe reposition them, look after any wounds or drains. And if the family want to go to bed, that's absolutely fine. A lot of the time they do. A lot of the time they're up those stairs so fast because they know someone is there that's going to care for their loved one, and they know we will let them know if anything happens, if there's any deterioration at all, which often does.
And obviously, you know, dying, it's tragic at any age, but is it particularly difficult when you're dealing with someone as young as Daniel?
Oh, it's
awful.
With
three little girls.
Three little girls, yeah, absolutely. It's tragic. And like Rachel's story is so touching. It really, really is. And I've had many, many of them, Miriam, many of them young fathers with small children. I remember one young mother, and she really, really was so brave. I was in with her for a couple, we got on so well, and she had small children and she was so brave. I remember saying, "I'm so sorry this is happening to you." And she said, "It's okay." She was just so brave. And I was going into her one night and I arrived in and she looked up and she said, "I have never been as glad to see anyone." And I thought, you know what, Anne-Marie, you're doing something right here. You're doing something right, you know. And I said, "We're going to be okay." You know, so, you know, it really is. It's a fantastic service that we can go in. You know, I couldn't do this job if my emotions were centred, you know, my thoughts were centred around my own emotions. You know, we have to bring, you know, a sense of competence and professionalism as nurses to the job. But empathy and understanding is a huge, huge part of it. So going in there and understanding every family is different, every patient is different, but the job is the same.
And I know none of us, no one ever wants to talk about death. And I'm sure all over this country now, people are going, "Oh, but Miriam's talking about death." But
yeah,
it's something we need to talk about. I mean, the mm-hmm. final hours, when you think that someone might not last the night, Anne-Marie. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you help someone like Rachel with that and Joyce know when they're in their final hours? Like, how do you determine that?
We can determine it. We can determine it to a point. We're not psychic, but we can determine it to a point. I mean, we will go in and I suppose the experience will tell us, okay, you know, I don't think your mum, dad, sister, brother is going to last the night. And they may leave us before morning. So they would just gather around. The patient would be very, very peaceful. We would do our utmost to have the patient at peace. And as Rachel said before, you know, it can be such a peaceful experience that the patient just leaves us and everyone is calm then. You know, because they have been through a very, very tough journey. This has been going on and they're aware that their loved one is leaving us, is going to pass. So it's no great big shock, you know, but us being there and being able to just let them know. I had a case there recently and they were kept looking at me and I'm just like, just go with it, go with it. Have a little word, hold the hand. And then I can just say, and they can look at me and I can say, "They've left us." And it's as simple as that sometimes.
And how was it? You've actually said that it was quite a beautiful experience.
It was.
Like it's hard to say that about your husband, but tell us about it.
So we were sitting, myself and his mother and father were sitting. It was early in the morning and we were just kind of chatting and we didn't leave his side. I never left Daniel's side when he was, any time, the whole 18 months really, but when he was at home, the night nurses would come in, but I would prefer just to sit by his side. And his breathing started to change. And then he took a breath and he didn't exhale. And I kind of thought, oh my God, I kind of panicked. I kind of thought, did he pass or he didn't exhale? So I looked at his mum and I said, "Run into the kitchen and get the nurse." And then he exhaled and the nurse came in and she was like, "It's going to happen now." She was just rubbing my back. So I was kind of panicking, but she was like, "It's okay." She was really calm and she was rubbing my back. And so I crawled into bed with Daniel. She was like, "It's okay, Daniel." So I cradled him in my arms and I just whispered into his ear telling him I loved him and he gave me so many beautiful years and that, you know, I would take care of the girls and that he didn't need to worry about them and that I was so proud of him and we loved him so much and I just kept repeating it and he took three breaths and his mother and father were holding each other at the end of the bed and he passed and it was a really beautiful moment.
You're a special person. Now we're all crying.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. Tell us about this walk. And actually, some person just texted to ask me, is the night nurse only for cancer patients?
No.
Or anyone who's terminally ill?
No, absolutely not. And a very good question, Miriam, as well. No, absolutely everyone. Absolutely everyone. The Irish Hospice Foundation provide night nursing through the Irish Cancer Society. So one of us will go in. We look after absolutely everything. We look after, you know, diseases like motor neuron disease, end-stage renal failure, respiratory failure, dementia, everything. If someone is leaving this life, we are there. So it's for absolutely everyone. So anyone that wishes to have their loved one at home and it's end of life and they've been told, you know, they're gone into a palliative care setting, so to speak, then we are available to, which is a service which is free of charge. We're available to them if they wish to use us. So absolutely everyone out there. I mean, I don't know what I'm on call and I don't know where I'm going or what patient I'm going to from week to week, but I do know that the families are amazing, and I find the job, as I said earlier, very, very rewarding, you know, to be able to do what we can do.
And it's free, which is great. Tell us about this walk that's happening. That's a fundraiser.
Well, we rely very much on funding in the Irish Cancer Society. So Boots are our sponsor since 2012, and they've raised over 3.3 million to date, which is over 9,000 night nursing hours, night nursing nights rather. So we have the Boots Night Walk, and Rachel is our ambassador, which is fantastic.
Next
this year,
Tuesday,
it's on Tuesday, 7 o'clock, and you can register online, but you can actually rock up on Tuesday.
To where?
To the Phoenix Park at 7 o'clock, to the Phoenix Park.
In the
cross in the evening.
Yeah.
It's only 3.5, so it's not going to kill anyone. It's 3.5 kilometres. It's great fun. They actually have the Dublin Gospel Choir this year at it. You'll get your t-shirt. You can register when you get there. So anyone that just wants to come along and do the walk that they, you know, for us as night nurses, so that we can do the job we're doing. We do rely on the funding from the public.
Now, how are your three little girls?
They're great. They're really fun. They're brilliant.
How old are they now? 14?
14.
Yeah.
10. And Hannah was 8 yesterday.
Fantastic.
Yeah. They're doing fantastic, yeah.
And 5 years on, how are you? I mean, you're a huge influencer, so I watch you on Instagram and you're fantastic, but how are you 5 years on yourself?
Really good. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. We miss them desperately, obviously. We love to talk about them. Like you said, when people are like, oh, debt, and it's such like a topic. It's so natural in our house. Like, my kids talk about daddy the whole time and they'll say, my daddy died, and as if it was nothing to them, you know, and some people clam up, but we just talk about it every day, so it's so normal to them. And I think it's great. We speak about it all the time, and we speak about him and our memories. And so, where if you come into my house, it might break your heart hearing the little things that they say, but to us, it's lovely to us, you know, and going up to the grave, it's a happy moment, where it might devastate you maybe to see, like Holly say when she made her communion, she's twirling in front of his grave saying, look at my dress, daddy. Now I have a little tear, but to them, it's just normal, and it's lovely. They're just having a chat with their daddy, but so it's, they're doing really well, considering everything. They're doing really well.
Yeah, no, you're great. And 5 years on, and he'd love you to have, and you've met someone new.
I have.
On your Instagram, which is nice.
Yeah.
You're a very young woman yourself. Yeah.
He always said, you know, don't want you on your own. And I never believed, never thought that I would ever meet anybody. And, you know, he would always want to speak about it. And he spoke to me and his family and everything about what he wanted. And I was always having none of it. No. But when I least expected it then, I met someone. He's really lovely.
Yeah, which is lovely.
Yes.
So for anyone listening even, whether you've been through such an extraordinary, difficult experience, Rachel, what advice would you give to someone maybe who's currently minding someone who's terminally ill?
God, it's so hard. I just think go easy on yourself. Just take each day as it comes, and it's okay to cry, and it's okay to, because I was very hard on myself with Daniel, and, you know, but I think, looking back, it's all right to break down, like, what you're going through, like, you're losing the person. Like, we were kids when we got together. Daniel was my whole world, you know. So just go easy on yourself, and each day as a you know, they say, like, day by day, hour by hour, like, minute by minute sometimes. You just need to take it as it comes.
And final word for you, and actually final last word to you, Anne-Marie, what would you say?
I just feel that, you know, if you do want your loved one, if you do want your loved one at home, it's very well set up. It's very, very well set up. You have the day team going in from the hospice. You have us going in at night, and you also have PHN. So, you know, the patient can have a hospital bed like Daniel had. It's very, very well set up. So if you're on board and you're there to assist us as night nurses and the day team going in, there's plenty of support. And as I say, if you want to avail of it, it's a free service. And just quickly mention the Boots Night Walk again on Tuesday at 7 o'clock, and we'll see you all then.
Well, look, Rachel Gorry and Anne-Marie Ward, thank you both for coming in this morning. As you say, the Boots Night Walk takes place is coming Tuesday, September the 10th at Dublin's Phoenix Park or any location of your choosing, and all the details are on bootsnightwalk.com, and all proceeds go to their night nurse service in the Irish Cancer Society. And as you said, you can turn up or you can register in advance. Thank you so much, Rachel. I'm so sorry you lost your Daniel, but look, thank you for being here. And
thanks so much, Mary. It was lovely to be here.
Look after yourself.